When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, hello, here we go, it's the Cop Hype Podcast.
How are we doing, everyone? Welcome back to another Cop Hype Podcast and another brand new show for us. It's called The Stats Show, where we're going to have a look at the Reds' season in stats, and also look at Southampton and upcoming United game as well. I'm Mick Moran, and joined by Optus Michael Reid. How are you doing, lad?
Not bad, thanks, Mick. Holding up well. You well?
Yeah, good. Nice one for coming on. I've been wanting to do this for ages. I mean, do the podcast with Jay, and he's always like, "Oh, you need to get a stat show." And I was like, "I'll get round to it." And I was just like trying to find a guest, and then stars aligned, got you on. Got a few lined up, so nice one for coming on. But before we get into obviously the season and Liverpool and stats and maybe some good stats and maybe not so good stats.
Yeah.
How did you get into all this then? Because I've always been fascinated with like the statistic world and how it relates to footy and whatever else. So how did it come about that you got into it all?
Yeah, I didn't really sort of intend to be a football statistician or work in stats in football and things. So like every fan like follows Octa Joe and on Twitter, and you see those stats and you like the sort of mystery around Octa Joe, and you see that those kind of stats going out, and they go quite big numbers and things, and you follow those, but it always seems that bit of mystery and it's not something that you'd easily get into. So when I did uni, I did a degree in sports journalism. And obviously at the end of that degree, then it was a case of, right, I need to look for jobs now. So I, like everyone else, just applied for loads and loads and loads of jobs. And then this one came up. A company was called Perform at the time, who owned Optus. It's now Stats Perform. And it was the one I happened to get. And it wasn't even a case of, I knew it was the job I wanted to be after having done my degree. You know, I could have gone in and been a journalist at a newspaper or a magazine or something like that, or in radio or broadcast or anything like that. I didn't really have a set, this is what I want to do. It just happened to be that this is a job that I ended up getting at Opta. And then I'm nearly 4 years at Opta now, and sort of taken. So what I've learned in sort of doing the stats and in the stats world at Opta, I've then taken that with my sort of love for Liverpool Football Club, and I've made sort of a database for Liverpool, and spent far too long, and I care to admit, building that and making sure I can give stats out that are a bit more quirky in terms of all-time Liverpool stats. And you just end up getting infused by it, and it's just something that sucks you in. And as you say, it's something that a lot of just general fans, I'm sure there's a lot of listeners to the podcast, watchers of the podcast who follow up to Joe and just have that interest, and it is just something you just get sucked into, and there was no design to it. That's the answer to the question. Ultimately, I just sort of fell into it. Is a truthful answer.
Yeah, and I think that it is. I mean, stats can be skewed, but I think a lot of scouting networks for teams is using stats, aren't they, and metrics and pressing in the final third and how good your final ball is and all these type of metrics that get measured. But I mean, it is quite a big thing now with Liverpool fans and every England fan in England, really, that stats are quite a big thing. And obviously looking at stats regarding a certain Mo Salah and people like that over the years he's been at the club is just, you just go wow, because of the amount of stuff that he's done at the club. It's just amazing, isn't it, some of the things he's done.
I mean, we'll come into, we've got some lined up for later on in the show today, but like it's just a way of, I mean, we all know Salah is a good player, but how do you contextualise that and say to people, this is how good he is factually based compared to other players in Liverpool's history, compared to Premier League players? I think a stat gives you a way, if you can give context to it, because like I say, you can easily mislead people with stats, which again, we're going to talk about a bit more. Yeah. You can easily, if you give context to a stat and you've done your research, it is a way of showing just how good a player is or a team is or how incredible some sort of achievement is if you give it that context historically.
Yeah, and I mean, we were just talking before we started recording about Mane and Salah and about their creation for each other since they started playing with each other. And I mean, that's one that for me is amazing, really, because like we said, there's a lot of they don't get on with each other and they don't pass to each other, which I kind of get because sometimes they don't. Like Salah's through on goal, he won't pass. Mane's through on goal, he won't pass. So I understand that. But what are the stats then for Salah and Mane since they started playing alongside each other?
I think the thing was in the Southampton game, because it was the first time they'd actually one had assisted the other for the goal this season in the Premier League. They have in other competitions, just so happened they hadn't in the Premier League until the Southampton game. So that sort of did the rounds on Twitter a bit, and people were going on that and saying, oh, it's the first time. But when you actually look, since they've been playing together in 2017-18, when Salah joined Liverpool, Mane was already there at the time, they've actually assisted one another in the Premier League 15 times, which is the third most of any pair in that time. 15 to some might not sound a lot, you see, because like Kane and Son, the numbers they're putting up, they're in well into double figures this season alone. But that's just a season, you see. Kane and Son are one of the pairs above Mane and Salah, and the other pair above them is Salah and Firmino, which sort of speaks volumes to Salah, really, that he's combined with both of them so frequently. But the fact is that the third most of all pairings, so to say that they don't pass to each other and that they don't get on and that they have this agenda against one another where maybe one wants to score more goals than the other, they probably do, to be fair. I mean, who wouldn't? Salah will want the golden boot. But, you know, they still do assist one another, and the Southampton game was evidence of that.
Yeah, and I think it kind of put a few of those rumours to bed, didn't it, a little bit, that obviously Salah is a very creative player and he's done that more often than not, putting it on a play for a player and they missed the chance, so he doesn't maybe quite get the credit he deserves for creating the chances, and albeit maybe not putting them away, he still creates them.
Yeah, because like it was his first time that Mane and Salah have assisted. Actually, a goal has come from them creating a chance for each other, but they've created 25 chances for each other. So it's not like they hadn't this season. So it's not like they hadn't been passing to each other and getting shots away from that. Nine of those were big chances as well. We can talk about how many times they will set one another up and the amount of times Liverpool this season have missed gilt-edged opportunities. I'm sure every fan will be. They've been kicking and screaming at the telly. It's had some of the chances people have missed, certainly in recent weeks, since Christmas, really. But the fact is, an assist only counts if the ball ends up in the back of the net. And all those times they create chances at each other, they don't count. But it doesn't mean it's not happening.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and another player that we wanted to touch on is obviously Thiago. And I mean, there's been a lot of stuff about Thiago recently. I mean, Phil McNulty was tweeting about him not having an assist this year, and that's his job. He's a failure because he's not doing that. And then you look at the stats.
He didn't get an assist last year in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, and he's got a career high of six in his career, and it's just stuff like that where it's like you're measuring the wrong statistic against the wrong player. Like that's not what you should be measuring him against, is it really?
Yeah, that's what, like we were saying earlier, about giving context to your stats. Well, you know, in Iniesta's last four seasons at Barcelona, he only got 8 assists in his last four seasons. And you can look at that and say, well, he wasn't that creative then, he wasn't that good, but he was still the best midfielder in the world, arguably, at the time. And it's just this ridiculous thing that if an assist, you only get an assist if you pass to someone and that player happens to score a goal. But you don't get an assist for anything you do in the build-up to those goals and all the, you know, it's one of those stats where, yes, it's players that build up a lot of assists. That is an impressive thing to do because that shows you are regularly creating chances for the players to score. But just because you don't get assists doesn't mean you're not contributing to the team. And that's the thing with Thiago. And it's in the last four games he started for Liverpool, he's played the most passes for of any Liverpool player in those games. So obviously he had the injury, which was picked up against Everton, which has been a sort of defining game of the season, really, for Liverpool. It sort of sums up that whole season in that one game. He picked up that injury, and then since he came back into the team, just the team hit a really bad run of form. And but now it looks to me like he's got the Premier League and he's getting what Klopp wants of him, because Liverpool play differently to the way Bayern Munich plays. He was often in a 4-2-3-1 formation. Now he's in a 4-3-3, where he's got more central midfielders along with him. The fullbacks are maybe expected to bomb on a bit more. He's got a different attacker in front of him. You know, there's no Bayern's a Lewandowski. Liverpool don't have that type of striker who will, you know, score bucket loads of goals and get into the 6-yard box. Down from the centre, the threat comes from out wide, so it's different. But I think he's getting to grips with that, and the fact that he's made the most passes in those games recently, where Liverpool start to pick up form, that's the key thing with that. Like, you look in the Newcastle game, Liverpool were winning and creating bucket loads of chances. Thiago came off, and then Newcastle started to get back in the game. It's not the sole reason. I'm not blaming Klopp for the substitution. That control over the game, didn't he? And it just feels like, you know, next season, once players like Van Dijk are back and he can play alongside Fabinho in midfield and Henderson in midfield, who's been out, it could well be such a key player for Liverpool next season.
Yeah, and I think even, like you said, with Van Dijk back and all of the players back at the back of, well, centre-half with Gomez and whoever else is going to be playing there, you can then not really worry too much, especially if Fabinho's playing in front of the back four. He can then go a bit further forward and maybe start adding more assists to his game, because, I mean, the assist to the assist doesn't get recognised, but, I mean, yeah, you look at the Everton game where Henderson scores, what a ball that is into Mane, into the space. It's things like that where it's for our own benefit that we can potentially try and get him near the goal, because he's got that killer pass, hasn't he, to slice just a defence open in the blink of an eye, really.
Yeah, exactly. How many times you see it at Man City with De Bruyne, where he gets a lot of assists himself, but where he plays that through ball to, say, Sterling, who will then cut it back for a Jesus or an Aguero, De Bruyne wouldn't get the assist for that through ball, where he's the one that's turned the defence. And Thiago's got that in him. He's a different type of midfielder to De Bruyne. I'm not saying he's the same type, but he's got that in him. And I think Thiago's just that kind of midfielder where you can play everything through him. It's the quantity, and not just the quantity of the passes. Anyone can make loads of passes and they could all go backwards or sideways, but he makes them quite attacking areas as well. He's in the top five for passes in the final third per 90 minutes by midfield players in the Premier League this season. So he's really high for how often he's not just making passes. In terms of having the most in the game for Liverpool, the last four games, as I've mentioned, is where he's making them. He's making sure Liverpool have the ball high up the pitch. If you have lots of passes and it's round the back, and it's difficult to play the high line, whereas with Thiago on the ball, you can afford to step up a bit more, because he can have the ball in those tight areas, and the stats back that up with those passing numbers, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's just a maestro, isn't he? He really is. And I just can't, like you said, I can't wait for next year, where he can kind of forget about those. I mean, he's getting better at his tackling. I mean, that's definitely improved. And I think next year, that might, if he's not got that in the back of his mind where he needs to track back a little bit, I mean, if he's playing on the side of a three, maybe he has to do that anyway. But he's, to have him in that field, he is like the cherry on the cake of what would be a very, very strong Liverpool team. And I mean, we can do so much good with him in the team next year. But we'll move on to some more assists. And I mean, it was really interesting, this one, this graphic that I'm going to put up. It's about Premier League assists, and a certain Bobby Firmino and Mo Salah in there. So I'll just throw that up now if you want to give us a little talk through on this one.
So obviously the reason we're highlighting these two in this list is because they both got an assist in the Southampton game. Firmino came on, he only played sort of last 10-11 minutes of that game, and he assisted Thiago's goal, which sort of killed Southampton off. And what I've sort of, the reason we spoke about this, Mick, and we wanted to point it out, was that, you know, we'll probably surprise a few. This is in the Premier League era, how many assists, the player for the most assists for Liverpool. It was probably a surprise some people maybe that Firmino is as high up as he is there. You look at some of the creative midfielders Liverpool have had over the years. I mean, Gerrard is leaps and bounds ahead in terms of how many games he's played and how many assists he's got. But then Firmino's not a million miles behind Steve McManaman, who was one of the best wingers of his generation. You know, there's a real reason Real Madrid came in for him. Firmino's obviously a different position, different style of player. But he's not a million miles behind. But and then he's quite far ahead of the chasing pack. So 60 assists in 288 games for Firmino, for Liverpool. Like you say, it's not assist numbers, they're not easy to rack up high figures for. But when you give that context that he's only behind Gerrard and McManaman in the Premier League era by Liverpool players, that shows how good he's been, really, at being that creative player, despite being the central striker for Liverpool. And then Salah, who has 42 assists in 199 games for Liverpool. Well, he's just below Coutinho there, 201 games, 43 assists. So in two fewer games, he's got one fewer assist. Now, Coutinho's job, really, in that Liverpool team was to set up goals. He was the creative midfielder. He also had an incredible long-range shot on him as well. We all know that. But really, if people look back on Coutinho's spell at Liverpool, it'd be those slicing through passes he used to make to Sturridge in the early days, certainly. He used to be absolutely brilliant at that. But Salah's sort of on a level par with him for assists. And it goes under the radar. We were speaking earlier about his combinations with Mane being third most of any pair. It goes under the radar how, yes, he's a greedy striker and he wants goals for himself, but he really does create a lot of chances for teammates, and he really is a creative player, and he sets up so many goals as well. There's also Trent Alexander-Arnold in this top 10. He's got 40 and 175. He's actually level with another fullback from the 90s, Stiggy Mbeumo. He's got 40 assists in 184 games, so nine more games than Trent, but the same number of assists. So it's not a new thing that they've created fullback for Liverpool, but yeah, it's just interesting to see Firmino and Salah both sort of in the top seven between them. In the entire Premier League era. So they're not just goal scorers, they're goal creators as well.
Yeah, I mean, that one, I mean, the Salah being there where he is, that was not a surprise, because I know he's a very creative and very good player, but to be that high, and like you said, when you think of Coutinho, you think of those assists and you don't really think of it from Salah that he would have one less with two less games. That is, yeah, that blew me mind a little bit, that one, not gonna lie. But we'll move straight on then to we can go straight into the other Salah. Talking about the Man United game, which is coming up on Thursday. Mo Salah's just looking at his great assist there. He's also got another one, which is his goal scoring, which is obviously just as good, isn't it, Mike?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, boys, in that graphic days on 199 appearances, Southampton game was his number 199, which means on Thursday, the Man United game took working up those injuries this season. And it's been, not play that game after all, but the Manchester United game should be, he doesn't get any training ground knocks, it should be his 200th appearance for Liverpool. So, goals at the minute, which is the exact same as Liverpool's all-time record goal scorer Ian Rush scored. He scored 123 in his first 200 as well. And the only players then above those two for most goals in the first 200 games for Liverpool in the club's history are Roger Hunt, 133, Gordon Hodgson, 125, and Robbie Fowler, 124. Roger Hunt, he played for Liverpool when he joined Liverpool. They were in the second tier under Shankly and sort of building towards top flight football. So listen, Hunt was a great striker, but his numbers are helped maybe by that fact that he played in the lower division for a little bit of time. Gordon Hodgson, he was a really old name. No, probably very few people will know of him, but he's actually Liverpool's all-time top flight league goal scorer. And he played for Liverpool in the sort of 20s and 30s, 1920s, 1930s, so between the two world wars. And he had a phenomenal goal scoring rate. And then Robbie Fowler on 124 in his first 200. The incredible thing about that for Fowler is Fowler was 22 years old when he made his 200th appearance, and he scored 124 goals by that stage. So you look at Salah, closer to 30. Listen, that's not taking away anything from what Salah's done. But the fact is, all those players that I've named there, your Hunt, Hodgson, Fowler and Rush, are all centre-forward, central strikers. Salah, yes, he is Liverpool's most attacking player, but he is a different kind of player. He's certainly different in style to those in that list. And I think that's the kind of context when you look at how high he's ranked there. That shows how great he has been for Liverpool, and he is one of the all-time greats. You look at the names that he's above there. Michael Owen, he scored 107, so that's 16 fewer than Salah. Sadio Mane, 91, and that's impressive numbers for a winger as well. So what Salah's done is, I think, when all's said and done, I mean, hopefully that's not anytime soon, but in Salah's Liverpool career, he has to go down as one of the all-time greats, and that's the kind of stat that backs that up, really.
Yeah, I mean, I will bang the Mo Salah drum as hard as I can for the duration that he's at the club, because he's just, it frustrates me when people just like say, oh, if one player could leave to bring in funds for a Sancho, it'd be a Mo Salah. It's like, well, the goals that he scored, like you said, for not even being like, I mean, he has played as a striker, but it, majority he is on that right side, cutting in and scoring bangers, like against Chelsea. He's done it against Roma. He does it against every team, and he's done it again this year.
There's only one team he hasn't scored against for Liverpool in the Premier League, and that's Swansea. He only played twice in his first season and didn't score against every team he's played against. So it doesn't matter who he's against. It's not like he's just some sort of flat track bully who's just going to score against the relegation fodder and the lower teams lower down the table. No disrespect to them, but he scores in big games as well. And I think that even this season he scored in both home and away against Man City. I know the penalties, but they've still got to be scored. And some of the ones you gave there, the Chelsea goal, that was such a pivotal goal at the time for Liverpool. And the Roma, the brace he scored against Roma in the semi final of Champions League, he then scored in the final the year after. So he scored in some huge, huge goals for Liverpool, and he is an all-time great.
Yeah, and I think there's a term that gets bandied around like a stat padder, and he's clearly not one of those. I mean, there's been a few players, hasn't he, where they only scored against, like, I don't know, bottom 10 clubs, and he does it against everyone. And I think it is a shame that he'll probably only be looked at as a legend when he's long retired. Well, a lot long left Liverpool anyway. That's the only shame, really, that we should appreciate him a bit more now, because he is, I mean, I think when you're in the game and he misses chances, it's really frustrating, and I get that. But when he's got those type of numbers backing him up, then I'm happy for him to take those shots. And that's the thing, isn't it?
He's got a bit of credit in the bank, hasn't he? You know, if anyone's allowed to miss a few chances, it's probably him. And listen, he will beat himself up more than the fan watching him when he misses those chances. He will probably lie awake at night thinking about that chance he missed rather than what he scored. Like against Newcastle, he scored a great goal. But then he missed three or four chances after that. He'll probably thought more about the three or four chances he missed than the goal he scored.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the type of character it is, isn't it? He's a serial winner, and he wants to just score as many as he can. I think that's, I mean, if you look at another one, Cristiano Ronaldo, same type of mentality. He wants to score a shitload of goals, and he does it. So it's not the wrong mentality to have. It's just
I'd also like to point out, we pointed out his assist numbers earlier. So it's not like we're talking about he's just there to score goals. Yeah. He does much more than that as well. And that he's just a brilliant player. And I think Liverpool fans really should enjoy him while he's here and don't make the mistake of looking back when he's gone, or when he maybe even retires at the club if some had their way. But you know, don't make the mistake of looking back and then realizing how good he was. Just enjoy how good he is now, because he is brilliant.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, mate. But we'll move on a bit, because we're getting on for 25 minutes, and we'll move on to Man United, which is on Thursday. I don't know if I'm looking forward to it. I don't know if I'm dreading it. I think it's a bit of both. I mean, I'm just praying for I think Thiago called it, we need a small miracle. I mean, I think we need a large miracle, to be honest, with seeing Solskjaer saying that he's not going to be able to play the same team for both Leicester and Liverpool game. So that to me says it's going to be a load of kids against Leicester. Against Leicester, and then the big boys against us. But yeah, I mean, Old Trafford's not a happy hunting ground, is it, really, for us? I mean, I think 2014, is it, the last time
we won there? Yeah, good memory.
Yeah, I mean, it's etched in there because that was the last time I was actually like happy after a game at Old Trafford in the league. So, yeah. But yeah, I'll just put this one up here. I think this is the right one. No, it's not. It's this one. There we go.
That one, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I've looked at sort of Liverpool's record. I mean, it's one win in the last 15 at Old Trafford for Liverpool. But no matter which way you look at it, whether it's away to Man United, it's a bit different, this table, the numbers, because you might think, well, away to Man United is at Old Trafford. It's the same thing. Well, it's because Man United used to play at a different ground called Bank Street. And even after war, they played at Main Road for a bit. So a few of the away games against Man United weren't at Old Trafford. And then at Old Trafford, Liverpool have played a few like FA Cup semi-finals and things like that at Old Trafford. But regardless of which way you look at it, you know, it's Liverpool's lowest win rate either away at a club or at a ground is at away to Manchester United or at Old Trafford. So minimum 10 games for the win rate away to a club, or minimum 20 games at a stadium. So it's an 18% win rate at away at Manchester United, 17 wins in 97 games, which is ridiculously low. You even look at the others in the table, the next lowest is 24% at Arsenal, 27 wins in 112 games. So that drop, that 6%, the others list Cardiff 25%, Swansea 26%, Liverpool obviously don't like visiting Wales very much. And then Chelsea 26% and Preston 26%. But you look at that and the fact that Man United is so far below that win rate. Listen, the players won't be consciously aware. They won't think, oh, we're going to Manchester United. They probably won't see it very much differently to going to Man City or going to Chelsea or going to Arsenal. But there is just that, maybe that subconscious thing that, you know, Liverpool, the fact is Liverpool have only won one of their last 15 visits to Old Trafford. And you know, last season, Liverpool went to Old Trafford on a 17-game winning run in the Premier League and had to come from behind to draw. And that sort of says it all. There's just that hoodoo, no matter who the manager is. Klopp hasn't won at Old Trafford yet. And you look at what Klopp has achieved as Liverpool manager. He's won the Champions League in the Premier League, but he hasn't won at Old Trafford. And it's just that strange thing. I mean, I don't know if you agree as a fan that when just games at Manchester United just don't play out the same as other games for Liverpool.
Yeah, I think it's just a mental block. Even, I mean, I thought even if you take the fans away, it might be different, but it isn't. It's still certain players just kind of have, I don't know, maybe just constantly bad memories of going there, or it just being like really nervy, cancelling each other out, just stuff like that. Where, it, like you said, those stats, I mean, it's not positive, and we're not trying to like depress everyone with those, but it's just kind of proving a point that if we do go there on Thursday and we do win, I mean, we do need to go and win. We do need to if we want to keep this small miracle alive. But it just proves how big the task is, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, ultimately, Liverpool have got four games left, could win all four and not get Champions League. So any dropped points now really will feel like it's game over in terms of getting Champions League football, because even if winning, the fact that it's not guaranteed, even if, you know, we were to win all those games, you know, the fact that one of those games is you know, arguably Liverpool's biggest ever rivalry up there, certainly with Everton, as Liverpool's biggest ever rivals. It just adds that little bit of nervousness, I think, to the fans. And you can see that record there speaks for itself, really.
Yeah, and I mean, there's another one here, which is the form table, which might be a better note to finish on than that last one. But this one reads a bit better, doesn't it, of the last six games?
It does. So if you look at all the Premier League teams last six games, obviously there's a game tonight, but Liverpool are actually, over the last six games, second in the form table, annoyingly, behind Manchester United. But obviously Manchester United do have another game against Leicester on Tuesday, as you mentioned. So theirs could change before the game on Thursday. Manchester United picked up 16 points in the last six. Liverpool have picked up 14 points in the last six. But everyone's raving about how well Tuchel's doing at Chelsea. Well, Liverpool's form for points is better than Chelsea's at the minute in the last six games, 14 in the last six versus 13 in the last six. better than Man City. They've picked up 12 points in their last six, and they're trying to just close out the Premier League title now. So that's a good sign. I mean, the two draws that Liverpool have had in those last six games, Leeds and Newcastle, I think a lot of Liverpool fans will be looking and saying, we just shouldn't have drawn those games, should have, you know, closed out the victories, should have found a way to just keep it at 1-0, keep possession and make sure they didn't concede the chances. But, you know, it just didn't pan out to be. But the fact is Liverpool's form has been really, really, really back to what you'd hope it would be. You know, to be second in the form table is never a bad thing. Obviously, you'd rather be top. But obviously playing the team that are above you, again, it's another big one.
Yeah, and I think it's, when I looked at those, I mean, I've seen it, like this last six games. It doesn't feel like that though, does it? It doesn't feel like we're in good form. And I don't know if that's because this season's been absolutely shit and we're just kind of waiting for it to end. But it's nice to hit form at what could be a crucial time. I mean, if somehow we get Champions League and somehow we go and beat United after just looking at those stats and the percentage win rate and whatever else, it could be huge, couldn't it? Especially going into next season when we get the big fellas back as well.
Well, the team second in that lowest win rate for Liverpool away to a team was Arsenal, and Liverpool won at Arsenal this year. So yeah, you can go and then win against a team that you've got the lowest win rate at. That would be quite a good sign. And listen, we're still relying on other results. I think it's mainly Leicester now that Liverpool have got to look at the results of, especially after West Ham lost yesterday. I think the Leicester game is going to be the Leicester games. They've got some quite tough ones, but they're the ones that Liverpool will be looking out for most at the minute. But ultimately, if Liverpool don't win their games, it doesn't matter. So you've almost got to ignore what Leicester do. Just win. Just Liverpool's got to win their games, and Man United's as big as it comes for that.
Yeah, because Leicester have got obviously United. They've got Spurs, and I think they've got Chelsea. I mean, fucking hell, it's. Yeah, I mean, it's given me that hope, that little bit of hope. I mean, I'd rather just not have it, but it's still there. And obviously, as long as,
only worry is that Leicester's games you mentioned there, that they're tough on paper, but Man United have got us coming up. So whether they will rest players for Leicester, and that'll make it easier for Leicester. Chelsea have got the small thing of a Champions League final. Yeah. Cup final to think about, so maybe they'll be a bit distracted. Maybe they've probably now secured top four, and Tottenham, they're a bit further away. Maybe by that game they might not have much to play for. So on paper you might say it looks really, really tricky for Leicester, but it might not be as tricky as that. But we've just got to see how it pans out.
Yeah, let's just hope for the best. But Mike, nice one. That was Boss, that. Really interesting stats with the Mo Salah being Boss assisting and as well as scoring goals. So yeah, I hope you've enjoyed that. If you haven't checked out Mike's stuff, obviously you can see his Twitter tag just underneath the bit on the video there. So go and check him out. Obviously, he does a lot of stuff for Opta, load of Boss stuff, load of Boss stats. So go and check them out. Thanks again, Mike. And we'll be back on Wednesday to do a little preview for the United game alongside Neil Jones from Goal. And nice one again, Mike. And we'll see you all in a bit. Cheers.
Thanks for having me on, mate. Cheers.
Podcast Network.